more important.
So this is a workshop for the comprehensive plan, and Lori Burnett and Haley Miller will be presenting.
Thank you, Mayor. So as I'm being reminded, this is pretty informal. We do have a lot to get to, and it's going to be dense. We're not expecting you to understand or, you know, memorize everything that we talked about, but this is really an introduction to the comprehensive plan. And Haley will come up in just a couple minutes. We do expect that we'll have some time for questions, but it is a pretty dense subject. Going to go through the overall key stats of the comp plan, some background, talk about how the comprehensive plan and the other plans fit together, go through the process of how you create a comprehensive plan. Haley's going to talk about the different elements or the different chapters of the plan, and then we're going to close with the care and feeding of the comprehensive plan. So what is a comprehensive plan? And most of these images are from the plan itself. It is a plan that's looking ahead 20 years, basically, where you're saying we got 20 years of growth, in this case taken to 2036, and then working backwards from there. The basic comment is, or concept is, that if you have a long-range plan, and if all goes according to that plan, if you modify the plan as you go through, you're going to reduce costs, you're going to set clear expectations for the community, and you're also going to establish reasonable expectations and reasonable costs for not only the community, but the development community as well. It's just not a lot of surprises if you do it well. The plan's updated every 8 years and includes 6 required elements or chapters. Those are land use, housing, capital facilities, utilities, transportation, and an optional is economic development. And even though we write our own comprehensive plan, the county leads the process. They're the regional planning agency, so they work with all of the different cities in the county to kind of figure out, is everyone playing nice in the sandbox? Is everyone speaking the same language? So we start off with growth, and growth is really kind of the story of planning in Washington, Growth Management Act. So we're not talking about just static. The GMA, Growth Management Act, was adopted in 1990, and since then, here is our growth. And as you can see with that yellow line, it's really straight. Almost no other city has such a straight line of growth, where it's hard to see where there are recessions or booms. We've just grown pretty consistently for the last 30 years. At 3.36% from 1991, to present, but as you get bigger, the percentage growth rate slows down. So even though we've added between 300 and 500 people each year, as you get bigger, 500 people is not 3% anymore. It's 2%, then 1%. It goes down as you get bigger. And so as you see down towards the middle, right now we're at about a 2% annual growth rate, which would project us out, if we kept at this, to be just over 20,000, almost 20,200 people by 2036. That's about 2 years growth higher than what the comprehensive plan projects. But since we're starting to slow down in our growth as far as a percentage, we're thinking that we're pretty much right on track for what our growth projections are. So for those folks that say, oh my gosh, we're growing faster than we ever expected, we are growing fast, but we're actually growing kind of right in line with what would be projected out over the 20-year period. Another thing that you hear quite often is, can we stop growth with the Growth Management Act? No, we can't.
Next question.
It's Growth Management Act. It's very tempting to say, you know what? Build the walls, you know, we're not going to have any more growth coming into Ferndale. It is very tempting. It's not something that's allowed through the GMA. So we end up spending a lot of time debating whether growth is good or bad when we can't really change the fact that growth is happening. Instead, we can manage it and make it look the way that we want. So in the comprehensive plan, the key stats are between 2013 and 2036, we're going to grow by about 7,000 people, grow by about 4,000 employees. We're going to be looking at lot clustering, more multifamily development, and infill development. So when you think about this, we adopted the plan in 2016, but we really started talking about it 2014, 2015. If you look around town, what have we seen a lot of? Lot clustering, multifamily, infill development. Yes, ma'am.
What's lot clustering?
Lot clustering is when you have a piece of property, say, and it has a wetland in it. The old way of doing things is you would only be able to develop one house on that lot, let's say. But what lot clustering allows you to do is say, let's say you had an acre lot and you'd be able to normally yield 6 units per acre. You're able to cluster them together into the part of the lot that is not the wetland. That way you still get the same overall densities, but you're able to constrain it in space. We used to have a minimum lot size requirement. We're expecting growth in Northwest Ferndale, as we've always had. Also along Portal Way and LeBounty. And again, guess what? You go out to Portal Way and LeBounty, and you're seeing a lot of construction. So things are happening according to plan. Mixed use downtown, fueled by residential. We're not seeing that yet so much, but that's one of the reasons why we implemented the catalyst, is because we didn't see that we were going to get that much of it without actually kind of stepping in and doing something about it. That's one of the concepts with the comprehensive plan, is you don't just adopt it and then come back in 20 years and see what's happened. You see incrementally how you're doing, and you make changes to either get back to the plan, or you change the plan if you say, gosh, you know, that's just not, it's happening the way that we planned it, but that's not the way we want it. We're still, well, the comprehensive plan says that we're going to expect commercial nodes at the interchanges. That might be something that we look at again, just because commercial retail continues to change pretty dramatically. So whereas we thought, okay, we're going to have Walmart and Costco and all that at the interchanges, are we? You know, that's something that we can talk about. Industrial and manufacturing parallel to Interstate 5. This is on Barrett, Pacific Highway, LeBounty, where they can take advantage of transportation networks, but without getting into residential neighborhoods. And then to remember that protection of environmental features is going to constrain development. So just as Circa was asking, you're not probably going to get the full 6 units that you otherwise would. Maybe you're only going to get 5. And since we're on a hillside with a clay lens on it, we can't develop as efficiently as, say, Linden can. So we're not going to be able to yield as much as if we just had flat, dry properties. So the Growth Management Act is an imperfect document. Depending on which planners you talk to, some people are going to say that it's like gospel, that it was just handed down from heaven. Someone discovered it on a mountaintop, and there's no way that we can change the Growth Management Act. That's not true. And if we take that perspective, we end up doing stuff like planning by computer, where you're ignoring what's going on in the actual landscape. The GMA was intended to address issues back in the early 1990s. And 30 years on, it fails to do some things. And the state is looking at ways to change it and modernize it. But looking at it as an absolute perfect document is nonsense. We have to follow it, but we do get some flexibility in how we interpret it. But the basic plan is still good, where you plan backwards from where you want to go, or as we say, kind of more accurately, where you're projected to go. If we are going to have 20,000 people by 2036, how do we plan backwards to make sure that those 20,000 people are not all on top of one another and destroying the sense of place that is Ferndale? And then as you're planning backwards, you're supposed to evaluate the impacts on your major processes and your finances. Oh gosh, if we put another 4,000 people up at the northwest part of the city, we're probably going to need another east-west connector. Thornton. Can we fund Thornton? If Thornton was a $100 million project, we probably want to change our plan so it's not all in the northwest area, but maybe in another area. We were talking about at committee about how the raising of Slater Road might be very doable and fit in with our plans if it was an $8 million project. But if it's a $40 million project, maybe start looking at alternatives or other plans. You need to trust in the plan, but also to reevaluate on a regular basis. And we'll get to this towards the end. This is not something that the city did a good job of, where as soon as we deviated from the plan, or the plan deviated from what we thought was reality, we would abandon and just start ignoring the plan. The key is to go back to the plan and say, it's not working the way we thought, so let's change it. So so that we can continue to follow with what the plan says. You've seen this slide. This is a kind of solar system of everything going on. And the basic concept is the comprehensive plan, in this case, is the sun. It's the biggest overall comprehensive thing. And then you have the planets that are the satellites to it, which in this case are the various chapters of the plan. And then you see in the upper planet, it has some moons on it. Those are the kind of sub-elements of those different chapters. So the Capital Facilities chapter has a lot of moons around it. It's got a parks plan, it's got the fire district plan, library plan, water and sewer plan. So those are all wrapped into that chapter. And then as you get into the outside, you start having your municipal code and your day-to-day instructions that are all based in that orbit of the comprehensive plan. So kind of thought process real quick. If we were in a small town in upper New York State, you're going to kind of have flatline growth where nothing's happened, really. People are living in the same house that they lived in 300 years ago. Maybe there was a new house built 2 or 3 years ago, but you're not seeing that much growth or development. So really, if you're the city, you're looking at law enforcement. Crimes still occur. You're looking at, for your capital projects, more replacement and maintenance. And then you're looking at probably an aging population where I remember Brenna, our GIS technician, said that it was big news when the first fast food company in about 30 years came into town. And so that's what you deal with, you know, in when you're in a stagnating town. We're not stagnating. So here, all of our decision points are much more complex, where if it starts with how much growth is going to occur, we have to factor in where are people going to work, where are they going to live, does law enforcement change as we get bigger and more diverse, how are we going to afford it, what are our impacts to the environment, how do we pay for this stuff, and maybe one of the most important things is how do we preserve or create a sense of place. And again, that's something that can often get lost, where we can manage stuff as technocrats, we can find out ways to pay for it, and you know, yes, you can fit 6 units on this acre or whatever, but what I hear the most from the community is that with this growth is going to come a change to the town that we like, and that we're going to lose that sense of place. And there's a way to grow and preserve or enhance sense of place, but if you say, hey, we're just growing for growth's sake, we can't hardly blame the community for saying, but you're forgetting what was most important for us coming or staying here. And so that's something that comprehensive plans can't just be overly technical about. So how does everything fit together? So, and these are broad generalizations. And it's important to remember that everything does have its place. This is not in any way saying that one thing is more or less important. But so we talk about the budget. That's for a 12-month period where it's precise, it's task-oriented, it's committed. These are our marching orders. These are our plans. Now, in years past, we or previous councils tried to use the budget as a long-range planning document and tried to put too much in there where that really wasn't budgeting. And then there was frustration when the budget wasn't working the way that council thought it would. And it was because they were asking the budget to act differently from what a budget is supposed to be. A 6-year plan, and they don't cover the same things, but a 6-year plan covers generally capital projects, things that we plan on doing within the next 6 years or so. It's focused where you have projects. It's goal-oriented where here's what we expect to get out of the projects and here's a rough estimate of the costs. And it's likely. You don't put something on the 6-year plan unless you really think it's probably pretty good chance it's going to happen in the next 6 years or at least in the next 7 or 8 years. And then you have the comprehensive plan, which is very general. It's aspirational, but it has to be reasonable, where we can't put something in the plan. We could put something in the plan that says, gosh, you know, as far as transportation, we're probably going to see more automation as far as the transportation network. We've all got these smart devices. We're going to have maybe some self-driving elements. And we could put that in the comprehensive plan, but if we said that we were going to have Jetson-style hovercraft by 2036, that's just not reasonable. And so we want to back out of those, you know, kind of crazy concepts. This is one of the reasons why we printed out for you. You don't need to know anything here beyond a lot of changes have happened to the comprehensive plan over the last 40 years, especially since 1990, 1991, when GMA was established. And there's a story to each of these, but this is probably not the time to really go into those stories. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Haley, who's going to go through the different chapters or the elements of the comprehensive plan.
Thank you. So there are different elements that go into the comprehensive plan, and I am planning on briefly touching on the different elements. And if you want to jump in and ask questions, that's fine. And, you know, I have other people here to help too if we get stuck. So the first element is the land use element of the comprehensive plan. And there's a giant heart on the screen because this is considered the heart of the comprehensive plan. This element does really guide all of the other elements and really ties the long-range plan in for the city. So the land use element, and I guess the comprehensive plan altogether, does seek to answer the question, in what way does the city intend to manage new and existing population and employment growth over the next 20 years? And this plan ties in all the pieces to where the population will be placed and where the different employment levels will grow throughout the city. And the wheel up on the screen shows the different inputs that contribute to the land use planning component related to the community, the densities, how things are built, the variety of environmental areas related to critical areas. There is a river that goes through the city, and part of the city is located on the hillside. So all of those physical attributes contribute to how land use planning works in this element. And then how it's distributed and how it relates to other elements in the plan. And you already touched on earlier the growth projections for the population, and that the city is expected to grow approximately by 7,000 people in the next 20 years. And these are statistics related to the employment projections, and the city is projected to grow by approximately 4,000 jobs, and the population to employment ratio is expected to increase from 0.42 to 0.48.
And that was an important part of the discussion when we were formulating the comprehensive plan, where a 0.42 jobs ratio is really a bedroom community. And the closer that you can get to 0.5 or greater, you start to then be kind of net attractor. And that then creates other opportunities, not only jobs, but again, that sense of place of, you know, this being where people live and work rather than just a place where people live. So we thought that that was an important target to shoot for as far as the additional employment.
Thanks. And we may touch on this later, but there is a huge change in population shift throughout the day. So most people that live here leave the city to go work elsewhere, and then the people who live outside of the city come here to work. So there's a pretty big exchange of people during the day. So with the growth projections, in the land use element, the city reviews, the city staff and the county and other jurisdictions involved in the process review the area that is buildable throughout the city. And I touched on this earlier, the buildable land is the net area that you can actually construct these types of the growth in there, the residential units and the commercial units. So the city has approximately 558 acres total within the city limits to build in, so that's about 19% of the city. And then the UGA, which is the urban growth area that is outside of the city, has about 32% buildable lands within that area. So that's the area that's determined. And then to look at the land capacity that's available, the element divides the city and the UGA into 8 different districts. And I won't go into detail for each district, but there is an analysis on each section of the city. So basically what this diagram is showing is that there is the existing level of growth, which is the lower portion of the bar, and then the darker color on top of the bar shows the projected amount of growth in these certain areas. So what this is showing is that the city will continue to grow in Area 5 and to the northwest, primarily with single-family residential uses. And then more commercial will occur along the Interstate 5 from Grandview down to Slater. And the downtown area will continue to grow with multifamily units and commercial retail uses. And with that, this is the overall land use plan. And this was shown to the City Council previously during the Zoning 101 presentation. So this land use element basically creates this plan, and it's divided into eight or nine different land use categories. So these are the overall arching plans for the city, and then the different zones are derived from these different land uses. So that's the land use element of the plan. And then moving forward, with all this growth, there is also an increased strain on the street systems in the city. And this is where the transportation element comes in. And this element guides the different transportation facilities throughout the city, related to roadways, pedestrian and bicycle facilities, transit and freight. And the city does spend time in this element evaluating the systems and the existing capacity of the systems. And throughout the plan, the city works with the traffic consultant to identify an acceptable level of service. And what level of service means is basically it's a measurement to grade different areas of the transportation system and determine what level it's functioning at. So the scale that the city uses right now is A to F, so similar to a grading scale. A is the best, F is failing.
So wouldn't we want all of our streets to be in A?
That's the plan. It's not very possible to have every single street, I think, functioning at that level. There is, go ahead, sorry. Kevin?
Sorry? It looks like you have something to say.
One of the issues with A is that it's free-flowing conditions, which means that you're not utilizing the full capacity of the road. So you can have an A condition where you have a four-lane freeway and you have one car in each lane and there's no one a mile ahead or in front of you. There you've overbuilt. So you want to, you also probably don't want an F unless you're Bellingham, and because then you're in gridlocked traffic. So the most common is a D in urban areas, where a D is some delays, but it's using about, 80% of the capacity.
Yeah, but I mean, the level of service, is based on the delay in the intersection or in the corridor, and depending on where we're at within the city, sometimes we look at just an intersection as existing in isolation by itself. Sometimes we look at a corridor. With Main Street, Slater Road, we're looking at a corridor analysis, so we're not looking at the individual intersections per se, but looking at it more as a system of intersections that are connected together. And there is a trade-off, and this is one of those areas that council has the ability to kind of vary the track that the city is on it, but you need to be aware that, as with any kind of trade-off in world, if we want to get to a level B, it's going to require much larger intersections, much more robust infrastructure to be constructed than if you're willing to settle for a level D and accept that those, backups are going to exist during the peak hours. And so, there are trade-offs. It's going to be more expensive, and it's going to grind up more available land for going for that higher level of service. Bellingham kind of uses it in a way in some kind of social engineering. They're looking to get a 20% multimodal diversion, so getting people out of single occupancy vehicles and into bicycle, pedestrian, or transit, and they want to shift 20% of that vehicle, single occupant vehicle load, over to those multimodal. They're doing that through level of service and parking regulations primarily. So they will not address issues of congestion that occur during the peak hour to drive people towards other options for transportation. The city up to this point here in Ferndale hasn't taken that pathway, but it's a viable option, and it's one that
can you, just as a frame of reference, can you tell us, somewhere in the city where we're like at a level service C and maybe at a place where we're a level service B, or can you just give us a couple examples?
This is plan improvements, but I think you might help you.
Right off the top of my head, I think we're operating for corridor level of service right now at D on Main Street.
Yeah. I believe that's.
Yeah.
It's actually in the packet on the slide. I switched it out last minute. So
okay. I do know that, like, a prime example, an intersection that we've been looking at lately that functions horribly is the intersection of Labounty and Slater.
Right.
And it functions at a level of service F. So it doesn't meet what our level of service expectations are. So when we're looking at developments that are going to be going in along that southern portion of Labounty, we need to take that into consideration. And one of the points that we were working with a recent development that came in that's looking to do multifamily on the west side of Labounty across from the multifamily that was recently constructed there just south of the mini storage, is that what we'd like them to do is direct people over to Sunset and over to Rural Avenue so that they're not impacting that intersection at Labounty. So we can't make them responsible for upgrading the intersection to make it perform at a level of service that would meet with our plan, but we can alter the parameters of their development so that they direct them to an intersection that's more appropriate.
Well, and ironically, while that's an intersection that has a low level of service, the corridor right now from northwest to rural with those compact roundabouts operates probably pretty darn close to
probably a B,
yeah. Whereas before it was certainly an F at the intersections, but it probably operated at a D or so before they installed those compact roundabouts.
And that one, you know, in particular, when you look at that intersection, the impacts on the degraded level of service is from Labounty turning onto Slater, not from Slater getting onto Labounty.
Right.
So you have to look at it as we analyze that corridor, the Slater corridor, through the city limits, but those side intersections can have a more degraded level of service, yet that corridor is still within our parameters that we're looking at.
So it gets complicated pretty fast going through these different plans and how to address these existing deficiencies and deficiencies that may occur or a reduced level of service that would occur from additional growth. And this map that's up on the screen, it's kind of hard to see, but each circle represents an identified project throughout the city. And these are based on the need of, you know, keeping the level of service to an acceptable level. And this map also corresponds with a list in the transportation element. And this transportation improvement project list provides the name of the project, a description, and then the priority level, and then an estimated cost for these projects, and then a certain allocation for traffic impact fees that would go toward this, and then I believe other funding mechanisms, or
yeah,
just an estimated cost, and then this directs the six-year transportation.
Well, I mean, this project list, it's inclusive of quite a few projects that, you know, we're looking at during the 20-year horizon, trying to look at where we need to make adjustments to the transportation network based on what the projections for density are going to be based off of the land use decisions that were made back in the land use element of the plan. So taking that information, overlaying it with the existing network levels of service, then developing what the future needs are for the system. At the same time, we're looking at the cost of those improvements and looking to develop the transportation impact fee that we charge on all development within the city. So as Haley said, that list that she had up does contain an estimated cost to the construction of the project, and that's a like not even 30,000, we're at 100,000 foot level of cost estimation for this. So a very rough estimation of the cost of the project, and then a percentage of allocation that can be attributed to the traffic impact fee. And we can only assess the traffic impact fee on projects that increase capacity within the system and not address condition. So there are roadways within, you know, Ferndale Terrace where it's a horrible road and it needs to be reconstructed, and we're working towards that, but it's really not going to increase the capacity of it. It has two lanes now, it's gonna have two lanes in the future, and while you'll probably be able to drive a little bit faster, it's still gonna be a two-lane road. So you can't attribute that to the transportation impact fee. So this chart does get used pretty heavily, and as we come forward with doing it, we do need to make modifications to this list on a, I don't want to say routine basis, but we do need to update it because we have things like Washington Street on this list, which have been completed. We have the Slater Road project that's going to be going forward. We have Thornton that's going to be going in there. So we need to look at that and then reestablish that transportation impact fee and repopulate the list with new projects as we see how development has actually occurred over the five years.
Thank you. So moving on to a different element that is related to the land use element and transportation, I suppose, the housing element of the comprehensive plan. And this is closely related to the land use element because it does plan, does project a certain amount of housing units that will be constructed in the city. And over the next, I was going to say 200 years, 20 years, there is expected to be approximately 2,900 housing units that will be built within the city limits. And what this element really focuses on is providing a variety of different housing options for the community. And these different housing options are outlined in various zones and offered in under different regulations in the zoning ordinance. So the takeaway here with the housing element is that in Ferndale, the primary mode of construction will be the single family detached homes that we traditionally see. But as the city grows and into the next 20 years, more multifamily options will be available. Also with the population dynamics, there will be more of a need for elderly housing options because our population is getting older. There's a gap in Ferndale's population with people in their 30s, 30 to 40. We have a younger population and then an older population. So there's a gap in that age group and then also a gap in that type of housing that would attract that type of age group. So the housing element and the land use element work closely together to address these needs. And going through this element, it just talks about how to implement these various strategies, which the city is doing and I feel like is on track, well on track with these goals outlined in this element.
So right now, the only senior housing that we have is Correll Park, which you're aware of.
We have Correll Park and then I believe
it's on
Main Street, right?
Louisa
House. Not very many options, and this will be most likely a future code change that the City Council will see hopefully by the end of this year. We have been getting requests at the counter to locate full care assisted living facilities throughout the city, and oddly enough, these facilities are, and I'm sure there was a reason behind it, are listed as either an accessory use or a conditional use in most zones. So it's not really an outright permitted use and almost seems like it's an unwelcome use in Ferndale, which is interesting. So we will be looking, staff will be looking at that closer with the Planning Commission and maybe opening it up to allow these facilities in more traditional areas of the city to offer this type of housing. So we'll look at closing that gap later in the code.
Another thing that's interesting just about housing is while we're more than likely going to maintain about the same average number of people per household, the most common number of people per household, that's the mean or the mode, I forget what, is one person per household. So there are going to be more and more people who live alone. And so looking at what form that takes, is it in a single family residence? Is it in a 4,000 square foot single family residence? Is it a smaller one? Is it an apartment? Those are some of the things that we're going to be planning for as well to make sure that people can find what they're looking for in Ferndale and also allow them to age in place in Ferndale in the community that they know.
Okay, so that's it for the housing element. Moving on to capital facilities, and Kevin, feel free to jump in whenever you feel the need to. So this element of the plan covers growth and capital facilities and the response to that growth throughout the city. And the capital facilities plan includes these different elements: water, sewer, stormwater, parks, city facilities, and then also the separate entities, the fire district and the school district. And this plan is required to basically take an inventory of the various capital facilities that exist around the city and then provide a forecast, which would include locations and what the capacity needs are for these various facilities, and then include this in the six-year plan and implement that plan. So this is just an expanded list of what I just covered for capital facilities. And another wheel, and I don't know if that is so easy to read, but basically the summary of this for capital facilities planning is to look at the needs, set goals, look at the impacts, identify certain projects, identify how to pay for those projects and then put it in a list, and then it just goes in a circle through the planning process. So the comprehensive plan shows the long-range projects, and then the six-year plan would show how to implement these on the ground. And there are a lot of projects that are listed in this plan that the city is currently working on, you know, those major projects that Katie will probably touch on later today during the regular city council meeting. And similar to traffic is that the city establishes a certain level of service for each of these capital facilities. And some of these do not have a set black and white number of how to determine the level of service. So for example, for water and sanitary sewer, it's pretty straightforward, just be able to provide the adequate capacity and supply to the end users. With stormwater capital facilities, the goal is to maintain compliance with the Department of Ecology stormwater permit. For fire, it's being able to respond within a certain amount of time to emergency calls. Same with the police, being able to respond in a timely manner, and the goal is 7 minutes, and I'm not sure if that's changed or not recently. And then parks involves providing connectivity options to neighborhoods and connectivity between parks throughout the city, and then allowing a small enough distance between people walking to and from the park facilities. And then the list goes on, and that's provided in the plan. Also within the capital facilities plan is an inventory of municipal facilities, and then an analysis of those facilities and what is needed to expand. So for example, City Hall, City Annex, the City Shop, the Courthouse have all been conversations recently, and this was identified in the comprehensive plan. So now we're acting on those items in the comprehensive plan and discussing the specific details.
Well, and here I think it's important. In 2016, we had again restarted the process of talking about city facilities. And so we started a study, which we never really ever finished, which was not the first time that we started the study and not finished it with city facilities. But what the comprehensive plan used to say was, or maybe it still says, is that there was going to be 1,000 square feet of space per employee. So we have in city facilities, city-owned buildings. So we have about 85 employees. If you add all those things together, we're probably about 85,000 square feet. Therefore, according to the comprehensive plan, it says, hey, we're actually okay. But it's not true, because when you look at it, we have the city shop, which is their biggest, which is 20,000 square feet. We don't have offices in there. We have the library, which is the second biggest, or the police station. I'll skip over the police station because it's not convenient to my argument. But the library is on there, too, at 15,000 square feet. We don't have city offices there either. So when we have an overall, we need to make sure that our level of service matches, because I think that if you look objectively at whether this facility meets our needs or the city hall meets our needs, probably doesn't. And another thing that we're going to get into in just a couple minutes is, again, the care and feeding of the plan, where when the plan says that you need to do something now, it's always tempting to wait, but then the plan's going to say you're going to need to do something else now, and then something else now. So waiting until the best possible, convenient, politically convenient time, you're not going to ever find that, really. So, hey.
Anything that you wanted to add, Dick? I think it's like looking at
the water plant, you know, listed as a, you know, 12,000 square foot facility, and trying to, you know, look at like a, oh, per, you know, 1,000 feet per employee kind of metric with it. You know, we have 5 people that work down there, and the 12,000 feet is completely filled with equipment, not usable space. You know, there's a small office, but it's not intended to be staff.
It's not workable space. Just before anybody gets any ideas.
Okay, so the next element is something that I'll only spend about 30 seconds on, is the utilities element. And this does not relate to anything that's owned by the city. It's quasi-public infrastructure, so the waste services, Puget Sound Energy. And these entities do function on their own separate from the city, but the point of this element is to further improve the coordination between the city and its growth with these various agencies. So it's a pretty brief element. It touches on specifics and touches on franchise agreements with the city and these different companies and the need to keep those up to date and continue to work with them on capital projects and day-to-day maintenance and developments when developments come forward. And then a subsection of the capital's facility element is the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Master Plan. And this shows a 20-year plan for trail connections in various parks throughout the city. And the emphasis on the update that occurred, a major update occurred in 2013, and then it was recently updated again. The new emphasis on the parks planning in Ferndale has shifted from neighborhood pocket parks to more of a connectivity citywide between neighborhoods, commercial developments, other trails. So the focus has much more shifted to making sure that there are accessible trails to and from developments. And some of these projects are completed by the city, and some of these projects are connected by individual developments that incrementally contribute to connecting the city. So there's a whole plan on that, and we can touch on that maybe at a later date and go through the nuts and bolts of that. And then the final element that I will talk to you about is the economic development element. And this is an optional element in the comprehensive plan, and so we included it for extra credit. It is an important topic. This is relating to the economic development, not just in the city of Ferndale, but the Ferndale School District and Lummi Nation and Cherry Point, as shown on the map on the screen. And this is considered the Ferndale market area. And as most may be aware, the sales tax base in Ferndale is much lower than surrounding jurisdictions. And it looks like it's about half of the state average. So it is lower, and that is just because there is more residential and not as many retail uses. So as part of the economic development plan, it would be to enhance this retail, to increase the taxes, return businesses to the downtown, which we're working on, create local jobs, and then use Ferndale's location between Canada and Seattle and proximity to Bellingham to the advantage of Ferndale and increase those opportunities. So that's all I have. I'm going to turn it back over.
All right. Haley, can I have a clicker? All right, so wrapping up, just some housekeeping. The comprehensive plan can only be amended once per year unless there's an emergency situation. All the items are adopted as one docket item where the council and staff would work together every May 1st to identify what's coming up, what's been applied for, what do we want to do by May 1st. And then staff basically works on it for the next 5 or 6 months, reengages with the Planning Commission in September. They do their due diligence for the next few months, and council usually gets it around November or December. And you can continue into the next January or the next year if necessary, if you're still doing ongoing work. In 2020, this year, we're looking at incorporating the Shoreline Master Program into the comprehensive plan for the first time. Right now, it's kind of flying all by itself. Also looking at possible changes to the transportation element, as Kevin suggested, where we're looking at reloading some of the transportation programs or projects. The capital facilities, this year we're looking for certainty for City Hall and Council Chambers. Again, as I just reminded you, it's important to identify in the comprehensive plan, the six-year plan, and in the budget, the projects that you wish to do. And it is tempting to punt things off to upcoming years just because it's inconvenient. But it's probably not the best planning. And I think that the community will tend to trust you if you follow the plan, as long as the plan is available and open to them, because, of course, it is their plan. One of the things that we heard a lot last year was that we haven't thought long-term. And in fact, we were saying it, council was saying it, and the community was saying it. Everybody was saying we haven't thought long term. But we do have a plan. So it's not that we haven't thought long term, it's just that we haven't been following the plan or participating in creating it or amending it. And that's what we really kind of said at the beginning, is this is our plan, which is kind of cool. We're one of the only states that gives us this kind of decentralized planning. But if we don't follow the plan, or if we don't work at participating and continue to amend it, we really only have ourselves to blame. We need to work on making sure that the public knows about it, that it's as accessible as a 500 or 600-page document can be. That's why we try to have as many infographics and other things as we can in there. As we also mentioned, up to now, and this is the culture that I think this year we're really wanting to change, if you're willing to, is relying on the annual budgets to dictate long-range planning. That pushes an enormous amount of strain onto our finance department to try to pack all of these 20 years worth of plans and hopes and dreams into a one-year budget. Not only because we can't fit it in there, but we can't do it. And it's really not what budgeting is. We misunderstood the different purposes of the different plans. And I think it was partly because staff didn't do a good job explaining it, because staff was sometimes in different silos, where the planners would do the comprehensive plan, Public Works would do the six-year plan, Finance would do the budget. Really, we are all needing to talk to one another, because they all do fit together. We sought short-term fixes to long-range problems, talking about perpetually putting new coats of paint on city facilities is not the way to really address the long-range plans, because sometimes it's going to hurt to do what needs to be done. And I know it's difficult waiting for the long-range plans to take shape. I mean, it is. It's human nature to want to be able to see the end in your lifetime, in your career, in your term, whatever it is. But it's something that we're all in this on kind of a continuum together. Ultimately, these are all puzzle pieces, and they can't compete with one another. They really do work together to build the future, which is Ferndale. So that's our presentation. We have some time for questions. Do you have any questions?
Should I just add something? Please. So if you saw a table or a graphic or something, but you couldn't read it, all of this is on the city's website as well. So don't hesitate to, if you really want to geek out on one of these chapters, it's all there, all 400, 500 some pages. So.
And we'll write more if you want it.
And Dory will then talk to you more about it if you want.
I have a question.
Well, I got a question and a comment. My question is, could you send us this PowerPoint, make it available to us?
Absolutely.
And then the other was just a comment. Your last comments in terms of the fact that we have to be long-term in terms of what our long-term goals are, like capital projects, like, for example, this facility here, a new city hall. But I guess as a newbie coming in, you also have to temper that with what's going on just recently in the past, and the fact that we've had big ticket items in dealing with our Fulton Road overpass, our water, sewer, infrastructure, and then other things that have transpired, like the failure of the school levies. But it seems to me that there's times when we have to kind of, I understand what you're saying, but you also have to balance it with the reality and what the perception of the voters in the community is going to be.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
You know, I would like to initiate sometime, I've talked to some of you individually, can you do a short-term fix for this facility? There's more room needed at City Hall to remove some of that function to a different building. I've mentioned to both of you already that possibility. Or, if that's not feasible, maybe bring in an industrial engineer and do kind of a location study to see how better well the facilities can be rearranged to maximize more space. So that's just a comment that I have from that standpoint.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, based on the comprehensive plan and the growth, what does it show for schools? Do we have enough schools?
I think most people know, that the enrollment in the Ferndale Public School District is only moderately rising. It's certainly not as fast as growth, and most likely not as fast as the school age growth.
Okay.
And I think that the schools are looking at that. both the fire district and the school district are required to come up with 20-year plans as well. And since they are separate entities, the city is not responsible for it. The county has, as a regional planning agency, and since both Fire District 7 and Ferndale School District have most of their geographic boundaries outside of the city, we've been always trying to figure out how to bring the fire district and the school district on board with these things, because ultimately the presence or absence of a plan can have real consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've seen that in the city, and I'm sure that they've seen that as well.
With the growth of the city and the sewer lines that are going through people's backyards, the shared sewer lines, with the aging community, how, and if they can't afford to get it fixed, if a pipe breaks, how is the city going to respond to that? Is there any way that we could make the shared lines that go to our main lines city's responsibility instead of the individuals?
Well, I'll answer at least part of that. Ultimately, the city is the taxpayers, obviously. We're utilizing their money. We're just, you know, they've combined their resources, and then the city's able to go out and make the modifications. So what we're not wanting to do necessarily is squeeze the balloon a little bit, because if the rest of the community is subsidizing this area, what goes around comes around. But one of the things that we're wanting to do this year is look more at asset management and getting a better understanding of what we do have in the ground, and then utilizing that to shape some of our 6 and 20-year plans if we do see that there are projects that need to be done that are kind of maintenance plus projects. That's going to help us to kind of surface those things out. But I don't know that the city would contemplate acquiring sewer lines that are currently...
No, we have clear delineations between what is the property owner's responsibility and what's the city responsibility. The city owns and maintains all of the mains within the sewer system. The lateral connections, or the connection between that main and a customer's home, is the responsibility of the homeowner from the point where it makes contact with the main to the housing unit. So there is a clear distinction between what is city responsibility and what is the customer responsibility. I would say that the one instance where we kind of blur that line is in areas where we're going through and we're doing a street replacement project, and we go in, like Washington Street just most recently, or Church Road, is that we will go in and typically install new sewer mains as a part of those projects and upgrade the utilities so that we don't have deficient infrastructure underneath the new roadway. And then we'll replace it to the edge of the right-of-way during that public project, so that we can maintain the integrity of the roadway and not have it be impacted by what would be potentially deficient infrastructure that's placed beneath it.
Time for any more
other questions? Yeah, so I, first of all, I am sick today, so although I've never been accused of being chipper today, I'm less so. So there were a couple things. I just didn't want my appearance to make you guys feel like I wasn't paying attention, right? So there's a couple numbers and a couple statements in here that concern me.
Okay.
And I want to figure out, you know, maybe I'm overreacting to them. But the first two numbers are for roadways. We show being in the 20-year plan being $88 million in capital expenses deficient, and $17 million in O&M costs, and that's written in the plan. So I wasn't sure why that wasn't a bigger priority. Those seem like big numbers that we should tackle, that we should focus on, and it doesn't seem like the plan offers a couple options, gas tax, et cetera, that gets you to maybe $2 million, but nowhere near what we're projecting as a deficiency. And then the comments that go with it that concern me is that in the plan, and you know, from what I've read outside of council work, is the single family housing projects don't pay for the services that they demand. We write that in the plan. And yet we also write that single family housing is going to be the primary development in the future. So it seems like we have a deficiency now. We don't have a solution for the deficiency, and we're going to add extra deficiency to it by progressing with more single family housing.
Right.
So I don't understand where the solution is.
Right. So one of the things for the transportation projects, there are some projects, I don't have it in front of me, that are other agency improvements that occur within the city of Ferndale, where we, through Connecting Washington and other things, want to go to the state as soon as next year with a comprehensive ask for transportation projects, because the interchanges are generally the more costly because they're above grade, they're existing facilities where you can easily have $20 million or more at an interchange, and guess what? You know, we've got Main Portal and Grandview that we need to do. So that's a lion's share of, I think, some of those improvements.
Well, you know, and I think that we do have a robust project list that's included in there. And it's important to note that just because a project is on that 20-year list doesn't mean that it should occur or will ever occur, because they are, you know, in essence, looking forward at what we anticipate is going to be the development pressures that are on the transportation system. So there are a lot of ones in there, you know, and just looking at the little blow-up section, and we do have roundabouts that are, you know, intended to address a traffic deficiency that will exist in the future based on development around the I-5 Main Street interchange. It's very unlikely that that development will occur, so it's very unlikely that the projects that were put forward in that iteration of the plan will be necessary going into the future. So I think that, you know, that project list was the best list that we could come up with at the time that the plan was developed. But we need to look at it in the lens of reality today, and the next update of the comprehensive plan will go back through that exercise and look at it. But then, you know, to be quite frank and honest about it, unfortunately, we live in a time where $30 car tab initiatives come out and impact the city's ability to get funding for those road projects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we go forward, we need to develop funding strategies to address the road network deficiencies that currently exist and are going to exist as development comes through. Like I said, there's a lot of interplay between that list and the portion of a project that's attributable to traffic impact fee, and then where we place that traffic impact fee is kind of a more political discussion. And getting to the point where we need to adequately fund the infrastructure needs of the community, but at the same time, we can't place the traffic impact fee so high as to impede the ability for development to occur. So, I mean, there are trade-offs there, and I don't think that there is a clear answer, or it, you know, would be more evident to ourselves and other communities.
And I have a 20-second answer to the single-family residential. So part of that is because people still do want to live in single-family residential areas. Bellingham has made it practically impossible to do so, and because of that, we need to be looking at it regionally. Bellingham, for probably too many years, has kind of dominated the conversation as far as dictating how things work regionally. I think that Ferndale and the small cities are ready to fight them, and this next go-around, we get a fight.
Okay. So we get about 2-minute break.